broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Spanish Flowers Restaurant on Durham.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. Brian behind the glass. On-site engineering, Branham today. We're happy to be here, though, at Spanish Flowers. I've already eaten. You're waiting a little bit. I had the beef fajita lunch special, and it is fantastic.
Looked great.
I had a couple of the sips of the margarita. It is very good. The chips and salsa, you've partaken
fantastic.
There.
Yep.
They were very, very good. The Killer G's are about to eat. They haven't eaten. Behanan gave them a treat, though. That is good to see. Thank you to Behanan for stopping by and giving the Killer G's a treat. One of them has had their treat. One of them has not had their treat. We won't say which. You can guess at home. Anyways, we'll be here until 6 o'clock. Come hang out with us. Food is fantastic. The drinks are delicious. We're happy to be here. We'd love to see you until 6. Astros, Cubs, first pitch, Game 3 series finale coming up at 6:05. Took off my headset. There we go. Am I back on? Am I back on, Brian? There we go. There we go. Appreciate that, Joe. Anyways, Astros Cubs going on right now. We'll flat out say what it is. Astros up 1-0 in the top of the sixth. We'll react to that whenever it's over. But yesterday, Astros lose yet another baseball game in similar fashion to the way it was in Game 1. You spot the other team, Cubs in this case, with a big number in the first. You're chasing that the rest of the game, and you can't quite get over the hump. Astros lose by a run yesterday.
Yeah, but it's another – this one at least close, but no cigar. But it's still frustrating because of the fact that the night before they looked non-competitive. They looked like they were completely dobber down, body language said game over when they gave up the 5 spot early. Last night they were still fighting from behind the whole game, but even after the Altuve home run – you still thought that they had a chance, but it was that third through the sixth inning where they had every single inning, multiple runners on base, could not do it. It's the story within the story of the Astros all season long. When you keep having runners in scoring position and you keep coming up empty, that's going to be a major problem, and it just seems to be building more and more with every passing game.
Yeah, it was the same story for the Astros. 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. It's been their thing. You know, we sit here and we argue about lineup construction, and we argue about, you know, where does Jordan need to be hitting? Where does Bregman need to be in order to get him protection and get him going? We sit here and argue about all of these little – and you know how I feel about batting order. I think it's largely overrated. Do I have some traditional views to a batting order? I do. Do I have some analytical views to a batting order? I do. I believe in the gut feeling. Like, okay, Yiner Diaz isn't a guy I want to see up with runners in scoring position. Joe Espada last year in the playoffs when he's like, you know what, I'm going to lead off with Yiner Diaz in front of John Singleton because I feel like Yiner Diaz is a better hitter leading off an inning to spark a rally as opposed to driving in runs. And we see that this year. I mean, Yiner Diaz with runners in scoring position is not very good. Why? Because he's super aggressive with runners in scoring position. So what does a pitcher do to a hitter that's really aggressive with runners in scoring position? Gives him nothing to hit. You know who else is like that? Jose Altuve. Jose Altuve is another guy who's like that. So, like, it makes sense to have a 25-30 home run guy in your third spot in the lineup, but is Jose Altuve going to get too over-aggressive and not be the hitter who he is right now because he struggles with runners in scoring position, one hit with runners in scoring position all year? Yeah, he is. So I do believe in the gut feeling, Papa Belly, traditional lineups, the feng shui, all of that. All of that doesn't matter, though, when you're giving up 5 and 4 runs in the first inning in the first 2 games of the series. You know what else? When else it doesn't matter? Whenever you have the third worst ERA in all of Major League Baseball. Like, the pitching staff has been horrendous, the house is on fire, and we're talking about watering the grass. Like, the issue with this team is that the pitching has been horrendous so far this year.
Yep, no doubt about it. You know, we started the season, and the focus was the middle of the bullpen being the biggest concern that this team could possibly have. And in short order, you found out that when you lose your top 3 starters in your rotation, that it can make everything just on steroids. It can exploit everything, magnify everything, and basically set the table for disaster, which we've seen. And on top of that, when you think about it, it is the fact that you've had injuries coupled with the pitching. And then the final straw would be the fact that there is a complete inability to get runners in when they're in scoring position. We saw it all again. It's a microcosm, it seems, every game of the season itself. Last night, again, you start out by getting behind. Not that it was all, you know, it wasn't as much Spencer Arrighetti this time as some of the other starting pitching. But then the table set that they're going to have to be playing chase and catch up the whole game. Multiple innings for it, four to be specific, where you had multiple guys on, less than two outs, don't get any of them home, and then you lose another tough game. You keep thinking it's going to get better, but you don't know when because you're relying on a whole bunch of guys to come back from injury. And at the same time, when you're watching this unfold, you're like, hey, yeah, everybody's right. It is still a really good team on paper. They're going to turn it around. But will it be too late if they dig themselves too deep of a hole?
Yeah, it's been a wild ride so far for the Houston Astros. 25 games into the season, it's been really, really weird for the Stros. The eighth inning yesterday was super frustrating too, because you end up losing by a run because Altuve homers off of Hector Neris in the ninth inning, and you have runners at first and third with one out, and like this has been your bugaboo. Your bugaboo's been scoring runners at third base with less than two outs. And Caratini hits a line shot right to third base. So it's like they've been poor in these situations. And then the one time that Caratini puts together a good at bat, he stings one right to the third baseman. Astros get nothing in the eighth, and they eventually lose by one run.
This is what we've come down to, right? Yesterday, during the day, it was trying to make chicken salad out of chicken bleep by saying that Abreu had two hits that were stingers, but just at people. So that you were looking at that as a silver lining, as some way to make a positive out of a negative. And then last night, a laser to the third baseman that if it gets down, sets the table for a potential big inning, and the Astros are right back in it. And instead, third baseman jumps up, puts his glove on it, and boom, there you go, just like that. Water on the fire, rally over, and then next inning, ball game over.
A couple of things that I did like about yesterday's game, though. Sean Dubin pitched pretty well for the first time all year, really. And he gave you some length, too, to get it into the back of the bullpen, the back of the game. Struck out three, two and a third, didn't allow a run, didn't allow a hit. That was nice. Rafael Montero was good again yesterday. He's trying to be good again today. Knock on wood. And then I thought it was really good to see Ryan Pressly. Like, okay, yeah. Presley's been struggling. He's got to be somebody who is good for you. He goes out, three up, three down, strikes out a pair. He's not going to have that kind of performance every single game. That's unrealistic. But the Astros desperately need Ryan Pressly to be at least a good reliever for them in order for the Astros to be good.
No question. I think he's got to be better than that. I think that because of the uncertainty and just the kind of rocky road we've seen out of all three guys at the back of the pen, you already know that regardless of the role he plays such a big role, and he was already penciled in to play one. He's got to be close to what he was last year, or at least at some kind of level like that, with the expectations being at the start of the season that after the sixth inning, you could basically shut the door with the guys that they got. And from the standpoint on Dubin, I would push back just to say that his first outing, I think it was in the Braves series, when he went two and a third or whatever like that, first two innings, he was breezing. He did a hell of a job. He was pitching really well, caught some bad luck, got stuck after he came out with the pen giving up some runs, and he got tagged with him. Second outing wasn't good, but I'm impressed by the fact that he does have a plus-plus fastball. It's better than I thought it was. And it seems like when he gets into rhythm, he can really get guys out in this league. And we were talking about what J.P. France couldn't do a day ago, and now here we are talking about a guy that looks like he can actually get major league hitters out.
Yeah, and to your point, that outing where he got really roughed up, or his worst outing of the year, was that the four runs against Atlanta. He threw 41 pitches in that game, so that might have been one of those spots where he's eating the innings. Like, you were trailing 6-2. You're not really worried about Sean Dubin's ERA. You're worried about keeping the back of the bullpen, or just the bullpen in general, from getting super taxed. So Dubin, he had to wear it for the rest of the bullpen to where, you know, maybe his ERA is not nearly reflective of the type of pitcher that he is, but for that game he had to wear it because the rest of the bullpen needed to be rested, and that's when he got overtaxed, 41 pitches, gave up the four runs. But, you know, you talk about that middle relief. The middle relief's actually been pretty good. Like, Dubin, other than those two outings, that one specifically, you've gotten Seth Martinez to be really solid for you. Taylor with an E. Scott has been solid for you. Rafael Montero has been really good for you. He's in a tough spot right now, but he hadn't given up hard contact. But that's been the surprise. Like, the surprise has been, well, the pitching staff's been awful because of injuries. The big three in the back end of the bullpen have been awful. Like, the most stable has actually been the middle relief somehow.
It's a role reversal from what the expectations we had going into the season. going into the season, our expectation was they got to figure it out when they get all the arms back to figure out who's going to fill some of the spots that we felt like were deficient in the middle of the bullpen. Instead, the middle of the bullpen has been extremely solid. The back end of the bullpen is anything but that. And then a team that looked like it got better offensively, eliminating a Maldonado, getting a Yiner every day at bats, setting the table for a better offensive lineup, and then they can't get runners in with scoring position no matter how many hits they get.
Yeah. Yesterday was the first day of Bregman in the second spot. A lot of people don't like this.
Got a hit.
A lot of people don't like the Bregman in the second spot. Yeah, you're right, he got a hit. He's got a couple today, little bleeders. Yeah. He got a bleeder and a blooper today for a couple of hits. This doesn't bother me. Now, if this was Game 7 of the World Series, like, I agree. Like, there's no reason that Alex Bregman, with how he's hitting, just a couple of points ahead of the Mendoza line. If this was Game 7 of a World Series, no, he should not be in the top of the order. He shouldn't be batting second. But game number 25 of the year, whenever you know that you need Alex Bregman to be good, I have no issue with Bregman batting in the two-hole in front of Yordan.
Like we talked about, too, it's time to start, you know, stirring things up a little bit to see if something else might work. Just to light a spark, to get this team going. If that's what it takes, try it. Because what you've tried to this point hasn't worked, and it's getting to the point where, yeah, it's still early, but you'd like to see signs that they're starting to work their way out of it. And if that's one of the ways you get him going, you get the team going, and offensively you get runs scored, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. People saying that Pena should be batting in the two-hole. If it was Game 7 of the World Series, I agree. Game 28 of the year, whatever. Like, you got to get – there's two schools of thought on that. One is you need to get Bregman going, and then secondly, like, why mess with a hitter who's going well? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if a guy's hot, why would you all of a sudden rattle him up and say, here you go, have some more high-pressure bats in the two spot whenever you're actually hitting the ball pretty good?
Well, we know baseball players are creature of habit more than just about anybody in terms of, you know, superstitions and the way they like to get in their routines and the way they like to do things. And so if you get a guy that's comfortable and he knows when he's coming to the plate in the first inning and he knows the things that he does and gets ready to do it, Pena was one of those guys. That's why everybody was in the past saying he was so good when he was in the two-hole, because for whatever reason he settled in and felt a lot better getting into the two-hole than when he was batting sixth and lower. So at a point where he's now going for you when some guys that you expected to are not, leave him where he is right now.
Yeah. 4488, Alex got his 1,000th hit today. Congratulations to Alex Bregman. I wonder if his salsa has 1,000 sells so far. The Bregman 1,000th hit, the hit that he got the 1,000 on, exit velo of about 18 miles per hour. I mean, he was barreled up, squared
just
up.
Just a laser.
Lasered. He crushed it into the Chicago air. All right. Let's remember Montero in an up-down as a talking point for later. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Busy show. It is the day of the NFL draft. Do the Texans pick today? They currently are not scheduled to pick today, pick number 42, but we know that Nick Caserio is a willing-dealing son of a gun. But the rest of the draft, of course, first round coming up today. We are your home to listen to the draft, every single pick, only station in Houston to do that. So we'll talk a lot about the draft today. We'll talk a lot about the Astros. Bad Take Boulevard, NFL Draft Edition. Also, I don't know what happened. Maybe I rolled out of bed on the good side or whatever, woke up on the good side of bed. I actually have hope for this Astros team. Maybe it's delusion. I don't know. We'll get to all of that and more. Joe Espada said before today's game that Framber Valdez will be pitching in Mexico on Sunday. That is the good news there. He said Renel Blanco is pitching on Saturday. He did not say who's going to exit the rotation. We will, though. Who should exit the rotation with Framber Valdez returning? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, a word for Bull Shirts. Bull Shirts has been doing it in Houston for a long period of time. They do it like the name says. They do shirts, and they do a lot of shirts, and they can do it all for you. And because they're here in the city, you don't have to ship them out, wait for them to be shipped to you. If there's something wrong, you got to wait days to get them fixed. Nope, Bull Shirts has always taken care of everything. They've taken care of it for the Rockets and all my time there, and they'll take care of it for you, too. And it's not just T-shirts. It's so much more. It's all the different accessories, from golf accessories, awards and medals, coolers, lunch bags, backpacks, hats, protective headwear. You can do all your company logos. You can do it all locally, and they can get it to you in the blink of an eye. They're fantastic. You can rely on them because they've been in business since 1980. Guaranteed top-notch quality and service. Printed playoff and championship gear for two of your three most favorite teams here in the city that play basketball and play baseball. And they can do it all for you, too. Bull Shirts, a one-stop shop. Visit their website, bull-shirts.com, and tell them we sent you by, because there's nobody we rely in more or believe in more doing the right thing for you with promotional items and T-shirts than Bull Shirts.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Spanish Flowers Restaurant on Durham.
Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is true. We are at Spanish Flowers on Durham, and it is true that the food is fantastic. Thank you to Spanish Flowers for hosting. This is a staple in Houston. Your Beyonce's been here, Spanish Flowers.
Oh, really?
She kind of, I'm not going to say she put it on the map, because it's already on the map, but certainly... led to some more popularity, yeah. Yeah. Big favorite of hers. Framber Valdez is coming back on Sunday, according to Joe Espada, who talked before the Astros Game 3 in Wrigley, as the Astros try to avoid the sweep. We'll see how that goes. He said Renel Blanco starting on Saturday, but he did not say who will come out of the rotation for Framber Valdez. So if Renel Blanco is starting on Saturday, now, it could be because it's his turn in the rotation. Maybe he makes this final start, and then he's the guy that's the odd man out. I think we can all agree that that shouldn't be the case.
No, it shouldn't.
Like, I'm not pulling Renel Blanco out of the starting rotation. If you are somebody that's pulling Renel Blanco out of the starting rotation, 713-780-3776, I would question some things. So, those are your four, then. I think we can all agree on the four. Verlander, Framber, Javi, and Renel Blanco. You have some off days here, so you really don't need to go six-man rotation for, you know, a while. A couple turns to the rotation, more than likely. So, it leaves you with two guys. It leaves you with J.P. France. It leaves you with Hunter Brown. Who should be the odd man out of the rotation when Framber Valdez makes his return from hitting his elbow on a table?
Oh, it's time to wee-wee on France. He's gone. we talked about it the other day. Whether you think he's worthy of being in the major leagues or not, I think on this team with this much talent, assuming that they're getting healthier by the day, there's no way he should be a starting pitcher in this rotation anymore. He doesn't have the kind of 1-2 punch that we've seen out of Hunter Brown since he's gotten to the major league level with his fastball slider. He can do some things because of just the above average two pitches in his repertoire that J.P. France can't. And I believe that he's younger. There's more opportunity and a higher ceiling for him to work things out. We know his stuff plays. I think J.P. France is a guy that's the easiest answer in that question. And it doesn't take a whole lot of, if you've watched any Astro games at all, to just jump on the bandwagon and say, yeah, you push him out, you hope he can do something in the bullpen, or he's going to Sugar Land real soon.
Well, he's been bad, but he's been better than Hunter Brown.
But Hunter Brown's got better stuff.
Okay.
So stop throwing the slow curve.
I don't disagree that he's got better stuff. But his results are worse. So, like, what are you playing there? Are you playing the journeyman type of guy who's been around the well, he hadn't really been around the block in the bigs, but he's been around baseball for a long time before getting the call up. He was never the highly touted prospect. He's kind of a grinder. He's somebody who's a back end of the rotation. He's kind of a veteran pitcher where he's going to try to figure out ways to get guys out. He's going to pitch where Hunter Brown kind of throws with that better stuff. There's no doubt about that. And if we're comparing numbers, like, what's the difference between a 7.46 ERA and a 9.68 ERA? They're both abysmal. What's the difference between a 1.69 whip and a 2.49 whip? They're both abysmal. But France does have the better numbers of the two. I wouldn't hate – I think my game plan would be I'm leaving J.P. France in there, and I'm seeing if Hunter Brown can be a reliever.
Really?
I'm seeing if Hunter Brown can become – the reliever that can come into the sixth inning, get me three outs, and not to say that it's a permanent decision, but it's the decision of 2024.
Now, a couple things there, because of the fact that if you take out, you can't just completely eliminate it, but the numbers are going to be inflated because Hunter Brown had one of the worst innings in Major League Baseball history, where everything just got blown up through the roof, and the fireworks just kept going off with the nine hits and in one less than an inning and all the things that he did there. But I just, you know, because of the conversation you and I had about France yesterday, it just, to me, I'm a little surprised that you want to put him in the rotation because of the fact that whether it is the intel and teams have seen him enough now once he finally got consistently into the big leagues or whatever the case may be, the fact is that major league players, hitters seem to have been able to figure him out. and they're not going to get overpowered. They're not going to get outmatched. Where Hunter Brown still has two pitches that I think can overpower hitters and can get the best of them. So for me, it's an easy decision just simply because of the fact that both long-term and short-term, I think that Hunter Brown has a better chance and a better arsenal to succeed than what I've seen out of J.P. France.
One of the other things that comes into play here, 7560 Brown, he's no stud like they thought. 713-780-3776. We're in agreement on Blanco staying in the rotation.
Yeah.
So who leaves? J.P. France, Hunter Brown, that is the question, 713-780-3776. The other thing that I think you have to consider here is there are more starters coming down the pike. Jose Urquidy is going to be back, I don't know, a couple of weeks. Would you rather have Jose Urquidy than Hunter Brown? Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, they're going to be back in the summer. So I'm thinking big picture here a little bit too, because Hunter Brown is maybe on par with J.P. France, like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Urquidy, I'd probably rather have start games right now than either one of those guys,
sure,
even though he hadn't pitched at all in 2024. Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, obviously I'd rather those guys start games over J.P. France and Hunter Brown. So knowing what I have coming back for me in the next coming months too, like, I need to find out if Hunter Brown can be a reliable relief pitcher so he can be in my bullpen. So a lot of it is, can Hunter Brown be a big league reliever that I can count on, that whenever I get close to full strength, because Jose Urquidy gives you a fifth starter, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, starter six, starter seven, depending on how you want to deploy them once they come back. So this is big picture 2024 with the way that my roster's built. We need to find out if Hunter Brown can be a reliable reliever, because if he can't be, then he's probably not going to be on the big league roster at all.
Yeah, it's crazy how quickly the tables have turned and how everybody went from thinking that this guy was going to be a long-term mainstay in the rotation and a guy that could be, you know, one of the better pitchers in the American League, to where we are now, hoping that he can become another Montero, where he can come in and be dominant for an inning, get you through a middle portion of the game when you really need to bridge the gap between starter and the back of the pen, as opposed to a guy that was going to be penciled in as your four at worst, for the most part, and a guy that was going to continue to get better over time. And even more so from a J.P. France perspective, when you saw what he was doing and kind of the numbers he was putting together second half of last season, there was a lot of thought that, hey, this was a diamond in the rough, a guy you found a little later in his career, but a guy that could really be someone that might be in your plans. Now you're looking like, is this guy even a major league pitcher, and is the other guy good enough to at least get three outs, one inning every so often, as opposed to a guy that's going to be a guy that gets the baseball every fifth day and goes out and gives you, you know, pushes for five or six innings?
Yeah. If it was in a vacuum, France, Brown, like, I'm picking one of those guys to make the next 20 starts in my rotation, I would agree that it's Hunter Brown. Mm-hmm. But knowing that who you have coming back and when they're coming back, I would just go ahead and move Brown to the bullpen now because it's inevitable. So that's kind of where my mindset's at.
I think it's also because of the fact that you know that neither guy right now would be in the rotation if you were healthy.
If you're completely healthy, they might not even be on the pitching staff.
There you go.
They might be in Sugar Land.
So of the two guys, the one guy that at least could overpower and be dominant in an inning would be Hunter Brown.
Yeah, that's where my mind's at. 8711, trade France and Brown for a decent arm. That's kind of like trading two $5 bills for a 20. Like, who in baseball has a decent arm that's going to trade an arm that you're willing to trade for two inferior pitchers?
And the upside isn't on both of them, because the misconception is that J.P. France, because he just joined the Astros last year, is young and he's going to be around for quite a while. He's like 28, right?
J.P. France, yeah, 28.
Yeah, he's like 28.
Late 20s.
So at least with Hunter Brown, you get one guy that was a high-rated prospect that could be a guy that translates into, you know, multiple years in a rotation for a major league team if you just kind of work with him to get him right. But you're not giving up enough to go get the kind of player that you're asking to get back if you think you're going to get a quality starter for those two guys.
Yeah, I can never quite understand when players are doing bad and it's trade them away and, like, you think that you're going to get this incredible value. And, like, I don't understand it on both sides of it. Like, from an Astros perspective, you're trading your commodity that's trading at its lowest. The commodity's not doing well. It's like it's 52-week low. And you're talking about trading that player when his value is his absolute worst. And then from the other side's perspective, like, if the Astros are making a trade with the St. Louis Cardinals, why in the world would the St. Louis Cardinals send anything decent for a commodity that's depreciating? Like it never makes sense to me, that logic. And look, it's probably because people were mad. Like, I'm mad at Bregman, let's trade him. Okay, well, you're not going to get anything for Bregman right now. Oh, I'm mad at J.P. France and Hunter Brown, trade him for Sonny Gray. Okay, well, no one's doing that. No one's doing that. You're not going to trade players when they're poor because no one wants them, and you're also not going to trade players when they're poor because their value is at an all-time low. It's their 52-week low.
That's the biggest thing. There's no general manager on another team that's looking to do you a solid. That, you know what? You don't have coupons, or you don't have a green sheet where you can find the bargain deal of a lifetime and some other team's going to look to help you out. They're looking to rob you blind. They're looking to get value where they think that you're going to do something desperate. And that's exactly what those desperate times call for desperate measures. That's what teams are looking to pounce on. They're circling like vultures just waiting for you to say, I'm done with a young, talented prospect that another team might find a whole lot to be interested in and say, yeah, if we can get him for pennies on the dollar, there's a chance that we can turn that kid into something for a couple of years to either buy us time or make him a better pitcher than he's been since he's been with the Astros. That's what other general managers are trying to do. They're not trying to help you out and do you a solid.
No. 1565 just texted us the Astros score. We're inside of Spanish Flowers, the one on Durham, where the food's fantastic, the drinks are very good, and they have TVs wall-to-wall.
TVs are big.
And they have people know how to manage the TVs, which is a problem at some places, not Spanish Flowers. So we've been watching the game since the moment we got here. We have TVs right in front of our face. We know the score. Appreciate it there, though. 1565. You're looking to help out. We certainly appreciate it. 713-780-ESPN, which, by the way, this is your spot for Cinco de Mayo. All the parties you could want, banquets, birthday parties, whatever, especially the Cinco de Mayo deals we'll tell you about throughout the broadcast, throughout the show. Spanish Flowers is where you're going to want to party during Cinco de Mayo. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Who is the starter that you're bumping out of the rotation? Also, how can the Astros solve their first base issue? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Spanish Flowers on Durham on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I know you've been thinking about turf for your yard. Talking about solving the Astros' first base problems, how about solving your yard problems? It's ugly. It's long. You don't want to mow. Dead spots, weeds. It's disgusting. Get Sinlawn. That way you don't have to worry about that anymore. Sinlawn is the perfect lawn for your house all the time, 365 days a year. You're probably tired of mowing. You want to spend your time elsewhere, maybe with your kids, maybe with the boys on the golf course, maybe at the bar, whatever. Sinlawn is easier to maintain. It's nicer. It's better for the kids, better for the pets, whatever your reason. I know that you've been thinking about it, and if you've been thinking about it, you need to, at minimum, reach out to Sinlawn, because at minimum, you're going to get a free consultation, you're going to get a free estimate, and then you can decide what you want to do. You can decide once you have the options presented to you. Sinlawn's product is the best in the game. Top-of-the-line products made right here in the USA. Lifetime warranty, in-house crews. You don't have to worry about the nightmares of work that's contracted out. We've all dealt with that. We all hate that. You won't deal with that with Sinlawn. Sinlawn's fully insured, fully bonded. The customer service is elite. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Sinlawn created the industry. They are the sister company to AstroTurf, you know, the stuff in the Astrodome. Sinlawn has nearly two decades in the game, and they're the only turf company in Texas that can say that. So get your yard done with Sinlawn and get that perfect yard. Go to 975sinlawn.com, 975sinlawn.com, to improve your yard today. The greenest turf company, not just in color, but also in theory. Sinlawn, get your weekends back.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Spanish Flowers Restaurant on Durham.
We are at Spanish Flowers on Durham. I finished up my fajitas. My beef fajitas. I love beef fajitas. I think that a good Mexican restaurant should be judged based on their fajitas, their margaritas, and their chips and salsa. That's all you need. That's all you need. Good Mexican restaurant.
I agree with that. I think maybe beans, too.
Yeah, fine. But you can go two different ways with the beans. You can go frijoles. You can go refried.
Right. But I also believe that the flavor, the texture, it matters a lot of times.
Yeah, I think that's fine because that's kind of a staple.
Red sauce for me, you're right, though. I judge a lot by both. Yeah, but I love it when you can tell that you get a quality Red Sox, got a little zest to it, got a little substance to it.
Yeah, this place is a 10 out of 10. Cinco de Mayo is where you're going to want to be, though, celebrating your Cinco de Mayo right here with Spanish Flowers. All three Spanish Flowers locations all weekend long. They're going to have specials with Patron, Don Julio, Cazadoras, and the prices are going to be fantastic throughout the Cinco de Mayo weekend. Reservations for graduation, any special events you might have right here, Spanish Flowers at your place to have a good time. Three locations in the city, North Freeway, North Main, which is open 24 hours on weekends, and the newest location right here where we're talking to you today on Durham and Shepherd. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Brian is on the line. Brian, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Jeremy, I got to ask, whose tacos are these in front of me here? Because I really don't know. I hope they don't mind that I take a bite out of this. No, I definitely want to talk with you guys about what's going on. Look, okay, when we got into Spanish Flower just now, I mean, we're up by one, but are you actually surprised by this right now? Because, I mean, based on what's going on, I mean, I was hoping the Astros would actually turn it around this series, but I don't think that's going to happen until we get to Mexico. So,
appreciate the call, Brian. Thanks for dialing in. Full disclosure, Brian's here at Spanish Flowers with us, but Paul got the third headset all messed up because he's sick. He's sick, and we didn't want to use the third headset. So Brian's here at Spanish Flowers with us, which Brian told us the food's fantastic here. I was hoping that this would be a get-right series, too, especially today. Like, okay, you dropped the first two. You got Justin Verlander on the bump today. Get-right game, but the bullpen hasn't been great. They're going to have to start winning games soon. They're going to have to start winning games quickly. I still think that they're going to turn it around. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm senile. Maybe I've lost my mind. Maybe I am a homer that just can't believe the truth. I think it's too good of a roster. I think that they eventually do turn it around.
No, I'm with you. You and I have been in unison on that. I believe this team's too good to not turn it around and be competitive. The problem is, and to the point Brian was bringing up, look, I thought the Kansas City series was going to be a get-right series. Then I thought the National series was going to be a get-right series. Then I thought the Cubs series was going to be a get-right series. And I thought that by the time we got to the Colorado series, we'd be talking about a team that would be at or above 500, and they would be ready to compete for the division again. Instead, they're getting further and further from 500. They're double digits down from being 500, and they're looking at the Rockies series going, our fingers are crossed that Fromber pitches well, and hopefully at least we get one out of two as opposed to steamrolling down the tracks and taking advantage of a lesser than.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, the Astros are just going to, like, take advantage of a lesser than, because, like, maybe the Astros are the lesser than. I think a caller said that yesterday. The good news is, though, like Brian's point, when you go to Mexico City, you got Ronel Blanco and you have Framber Valdez on the mound. And if there's two starters, you can throw Verlander into the mix, too. You can throw Javier into the mix, too, but Javier's on the IL. Verlander pitched today. The good news is Ronel Blanco and Framber Valdez are pitching in those two games in that series. I have faith in Ronel Blanco and Framber Valdez.
Oh, without question. I mean, look, I think that's why I still so firmly and strongly believe in this team is the fact that unlike teams that get off to a start like this, and this is it, this is what they're dealing with, this is their roster, they're not dealing with the injuries that you're seeing with the Astros team. Their inefficiency to get hits is something that's because of the product of their lineup, not because of the fact that you've got these great hitters and so many good hitters, above average hitters, that just aren't getting it done right now. Because you've seen them do it back of the baseball card on the wayside for that term, but we know there's too many guys that are too good in this lineup. And the fact is, you're going to get your top three starters back, and you've been missing at least for portions, if not most of the season, at least one, but multiples, and in certain cases, all three of them. That means that the starting pitching is going to get better the minute they come back. That means the middle of your bullpen can get better the minute that they start coming back. And that means you're going to have the ability to have sustained competitive baseball from your pitching staff, and then you hope your offensive lineup can start hitting with runners in scoring positions, because it's not hitting that's the issue. It's timely hitting. that this team is going to get back into, if nothing else, a wild card position.
Mostly agree, although hitting at first base has been just an issue, period. Chandler Rome of The Athletic, he opined on a few different solutions of how to fix the first base issue. What I don't really care about his opinion. What are your opinions, and we'll get to mine too, of how you fix the first base issue for the Astros?
Well, I think that you look at it in a multitude of ways, from what do you want to spend, if you do want to spend anything at all. Can you do it internally, or are you going to do it externally? If you're going to do it externally, on the high side, there's Brandon Belt. I know you were, you know, the first, and you've been very, very big on making sure that people don't forget that that is a viable option that is out there if they just want to spend the money. If you don't want to spend that much money, Walsh was just released by the Rangers. He's got a ton of major league experience. He's had success in the major league before. He didn't have that much success with the Rangers, but he's probably better than either guy that you got on your roster as well. The Cubs, we talked about yesterday with Cooper, if he's available, there's another guy you could slide right in. He has had success this year. He's on the cheap. You could put in a claim for him. You could see if that works for you. And if you want to do it internally, it runs the gamut of Lo Profito and Cabbage are both down in Sugarland, and both guys are two of the top three guys in terms of average exit velocity on balls that they're putting in play. So you have those two options. And if you want to go a different route, you have Mauricio Dubon. Or if you're really going to go extreme, you can put Yiner Diaz there. The fact that you have that many options to choose from, and we're still watching these two guys compete for first base time every day, is a travesty.
Yeah, I'm just going to say what you said, so there's no reason to parrot it. It is cool that John Singleton got two hits yesterday. Like, I love the John Singleton story. It's cool. Like, you know, he had the two home run game last year. He had the two hits yesterday. I just don't believe that he's an everyday big league hitter, and you can improve at first base. If he's your everyday first baseman, then you have major issues. And all the other options, too, are kind of patchwork, too. Like, Lo Profito, there's no guarantee he's going to be a good big league hitter. He strikes out all the time. The Yiner Diaz, at least you have Caratini, who gives you solid defense behind the plate, and he gives you solid at bat. He's not going to hit, like, above league average, but he's going to be solid. I like the idea of Dubon. I don't hate that idea. Like, everybody's begging for Dubon to get in the lineup. Some people beg for Jake Meyers to be an everyday guy. Well, there's how you get them both in there. And Dubon's enough of an athlete to pick up first base. Like, he's never played first base. He can't do it well. The guy won a gold glove. He can figure out how to play first base.
Yeah, and the thing is to your point on Singleton, yeah, it is a great story. But you know what? So was Rudy. And Rudy was like one play, one game, and that was over. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, the two-home run game is something that no one's going to forget anytime soon, and that's what kind of put him in the hearts of every Astros fan. But overall, he's awful. If you're worried about it because he's out of options, but the fact is that you don't need to keep him around. I don't know why you're worried about out of options and trying to keep him around when if no one signs him, you can still put him on the Space Cowboys if you want. But he's proving to you right now who he is, which is a less than and probably not Major League Baseball player. So don't worry if he's out of options. And if some other team wants to take a flyer on him, there's a reason why there's been flyers been passed out more than at a rock concert parking lot. He's free for the taking because he's not that good. If you can upgrade at all for a team that we just got done talking about how much talent is on this roster, then you need to do it now, because now is where we're trying to at least minimize the damage so that the gap, the hole that you've dug isn't so deep that no matter how good you get later in the year, that it's not too late.
Yeah, 0733 says that you referenced the green sheet. Maybe explain that for the younger listeners.
Did I say green? Was it green sheet or... Because it was, or it's like, what's Annie's List? Is that right?
I don't remember Annie's List. I know what Green Sheet, I've seen it. I mean, Green Sheet, I'm familiar
Green
with.
Sheet was like you could find it at different, like, convenience stores and shops and things like that. And it was kind of like a very inexpensive way to advertise deals and basically get rid of your junk.
And, like, job postings, too, right?
Yeah, that, too.
Yeah, like, job postings, specific areas. I remember the green. I'm pretty sure they still have green sheets.
Do they?
I would guess that they do. I don't know that for sure, but I would imagine that they do.
I know they got rid of. There was another version of it that was here in Houston, and they had to get rid of it because people started advertising for adult services, and they got caught.
Do you remember the jingle? I'm pretty sure it was Green Sheet brings you buyers.
I do. I remember hearing
right?
that. Yeah, I think that's right. Yep.
Green Sheet brings you buyers.
Now the weird thing is, growing up in Milwaukee, during the week, the green sheet was like the comics.
Somebody just texted that.
Is that right?
Some of the green sheet brings you buyers. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because in Milwaukee, you know, like the Sunday paper, the comics were in color, but during the week, the green sheet was the crossword puzzles and all the comics. But it was literally a green newspaper in the middle of your newspaper.
That's weird. 3667, the Cubs just optioned a guy to AAA that has better numbers than all those guys. If we're just looking at numbers, Blanker's mentioned that. Gary Cooper is that guy's name. He was an All-Star a couple years ago. It was a name that we had circled as a potential Houston Astro, but they traded for Mancini. I would love the I was hard on the Astros yesterday. If Dana Brown, and maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on Dana Brown, if the Astros front office, whoever is leading the troops, I think it's Jim Crane.
Crane gang.
The Crane gang. If they do not put a claim in on Garrett Cooper, they are failing you as an organization.
Without question.
Because that is a absolute – what is the negative? What is that you have to DFA a guy who's worse than Garrett Cooper that's on the league minimum in John Singleton? Like, it is an absolute no-brainer. If they don't do it, they are failing you, the fans.
I firmly believe that either Crane's got to get his head out of his rear end if he is the guy leading the Crane gang in every decision that this team is or isn't making. But it, at a certain point, no matter how much, if you're Dana Brown and Joe Espada and you're just happy to be here and both are getting their first opportunities at the jobs that they've always wanted, so they're just going to play nice and play along with doing whatever is necessary to keep everything on a good in a good spot with Jim Crane. You're going to be the fall guy at a certain point anyway. And right now you are, whether you like it or not, because people don't know what they don't know, but they're assuming based on Reggie Jackson's comments that you aren't doing this all by yourself, either guy. So if that's the case, at least get into those Crane gang meetings and start talking about the fact we got to do something now. Yeah. There has to be a sense of urgency. It's kind of what I was talking about late in the show yesterday about the fact that you can't just take this as Club Med and at a certain point in time, everything's going to fall back into place and you're going to be just fine. You're digging yourself too deep of a hole already, and your imperfections are showing like a big white-headed zit right before prom. You need to make sure you take care of it before the dance starts, and then that you get passed by and overlooked. And that's what we're watching right now is two guys, whether their hands are tied or not, somebody, starting with the owner, if he's that involved, needs to start getting their head out of their rear end and doing something to try and give this team a better chance to win on a daily basis.
A few texters say that the green sheet does still exist. Okay. So that's good to know in case of ever looking for work, which we all will be at some point. 6030 says the Astros are the pink sheets, which is pretty funny. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Spanish Flowers in Durham. Swing on by. Mike's here. Brian's here. Come hang out with the Killer Bees. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. Swing on to swing through after you get off work. Spot for a margarita. Good happy hour. Great spot for dinner as well on a Thursday night. Good for any night, but especially tonight. 713-780-ESPN. So Jose Abreu, an issue. He's making lots of money. It's inevitable he's going to be – he won't be an Astro someday. Like, when will it be? Will it be soon? Maybe not. Will it be in September? Maybe not. Will it be next year? Maybe not. Will it be after next year? Yes, his contract does come to an end. Who is gone first, though? Jose Abreu or Joe Espada? Who is no longer employed by the Astros? Jose Abreu or Joe Espada? What comes first? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Located at Spanish Flowers Restaurant on Durham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Killer Bees broadcasting live. Spanish Flowers on Durham. New location, three locations. North Freeway. I drive by the one on North Freeway every day. North Main, which is open 24 hours on weekends. You can go out, and then you can go to Spanish Flowers on North Main after you go out. And then the newest location, which is right here on Durham and Shepherd. All three Spanish Flowers locations will be your spot for Cinco de Mayo celebration. Specials with Patron, Don Julio, Cazadores. And we're going to be giving away prizes all throughout the day during Cinco de Mayo weekend, too. So Cinco de Mayo, giving away prizes, great drink specials. It will be a great time. Also, graduation's coming up at the end of May. Like, you got to get involved. You got to throw a party. You're going to host one. How about doing it at Spanish Flowers? Any special events you might have, get those reserved today at Spanish Flowers. Okay. So Jose Abreu's been bad. Really wasn't good last year. It was timely. He had a good month and a half, a timely good month and a half because it carried into the postseason. Joe Espada has been on the job now. You're 7-18, 25. You're playing game 26 today. So 26 games minus one inning. Joe Espada has been on the job. People were frustrated, obviously, with Jose Abreu. I've started to see the frustration mount with Joe Espada. People are certainly frustrated with everybody involved with this team because you've won seven games and what's going to be 26 games here in three outs. Who is no longer an Astro first? Joe Espada got ejected. I'm watching it on game day, and I'm watching it on the TV. The TV hasn't shown it yet, but the game day right here on the website just shows that Espada has been ejected. So finally some fire from Joe Espada.
We asked for it. We got it. I guess a lot more
people.
That
was the tamest ejection I've ever seen. It was a mild-mannered conversation. He got run. He's not even – he must have said the magic word. He's not very animated.
Either that or a fan behind him did.
I like that reference. That was a good reference. Yeah, that was the tamest ejection I've ever seen. You know what that was? That was Joe Espada telling the umpire, hey, can you throw me out of this game? I'm trying to get my dugout fired up.
Have you ever seen the video where Lasorda talks about that?
Maybe. I know I've seen Lasorda mic'd up. I don't know if I know exactly what you're talking about.
He talked about it after he got done managing where he said, oh, there were times for sure that I needed to send a message to my team. So I would go out there and tell the umpire while I was kicking dirt, throwing my hat down and screaming and yelling, hey, man, I love what you're doing. I really just want to tell you that I need to get thrown out of this thing. I need you to toss me because I need to send a message to my team. But you're really doing an extraordinary – while he's kicking and screaming and whatever like that, and the umpire would go, okay, and tossed him.
Yep.
And it would work. I mean, if you're going to get tossed at that point, Joe Espada should be saying, I'm going to send a message to my team that my belly is full of fire and then I'm in this. I'm going to go nuts at least a little bit instead of the way that just went down, because that's almost like a librarian getting thrown out on sign language. Mm-hmm. You're looking at it going, what just happened there?
Yeah, I thought I didn't like the tameness of the ejection. I'm with you on that. Go be animated. Throw your hands around. Kick a little dirt. They were like on the warning track near the on-deck circle too.
Plus, he covered his mouth to yell at to say whatever he said to the umpire. Like, at a certain point, if you're going to get ejected, at least you can figure it out. No one's going to be mad at you if you just come unleashed a little bit and drop some language.
Yeah, that was weird. That wasn't a great ejection there. I wanted to see some fire, too. I'd rather see fire, no ejection, than the tameness there and the ejection. The first career ejection in the managerial career of Joe Espada just transpired, which perfect segue to our segment here.
Mm-hmm.
Who's gone first, Jose Abreu or Joe Espada? 713-780-3776.
My easy answer is, can we push? Because I think that my easy answer is...
I'm surprised to hear you say that.
I think you push because I just don't believe as much as what I personally want to happen and them to get rid of Abreu. I just believe that that money matters to Jim Crane, that Bagwell is a guy that's going to be in his ear believing they can figure him out, he can find it one last time, and we can't pull the plug on him just yet. And that because of the money and because of the situation and who is on the Crane gang, I just believe that they're going to let him play it out through at least the end of the season. From an Espada standpoint, I think if you're just being realistic, I think Joe Espada, because you're dealing with injuries, because you're dealing with an owner that seems to meddle and make more decisions than a lot of people would like, and the Hader deal spent a whole lot of money that could have been placed and targeted at different areas. I think Joe Espada in year one as a new manager, because of the injuries alone, he's not going to take as much blame and he'll survive. I think Abreu's going to get the rest of this season. And then knowing that it's the last year of the deal either way for Abreu, if he doesn't figure it out by the end of the year, that's when they'll pull the plug. So I'll say Joe Espada will survive longer than Abreu, but I could see both of them getting canned at the end of the year.
Okay. All right. Because I was thinking worst-case scenario. I think that Abreu can get DFA'd this year, worst-case scenario. I could see it happening. Now, not anytime soon. I don't think before the summer months. In fact, I don't think it would be until after, like, July. And it might require, like, some sort of trade. So I think it's plausible that Jose Abreu gets DFA'd this year. I think that what you said is likely, the most likely result. I really have a hard time seeing Joe Espada getting fired. I don't know. Like, Crane can sometimes be cutthroat, but how bad does it have to get for the Astros to where he gets fired a few months into his first year? Like, I really don't see that, like, the possibility of that. Plus, I also think, and again, maybe I'm just an idiot, I also think the Astros are going to turn this around.
I think
that the Astros are going to turn this around. I think they're going to get in the race. I ultimately think they're going to win the division still. I know that I'm crazy, which if they do all of those things, then Joe Espada is going to outlast Jose Abreu's contract, and Jose Abreu might not even get to the end of his contract. So my answer here would be Espada as well, and I really don't see the scenario where you get so bad where Espada is the first one to go.
With the scenario that you just painted, if it goes wrong or it continues to go wrong, it's not because Joe Espada is doing a lot of things that we're pointing the finger at and saying another manager would have won that game by doing this and doing that. It's the fact that the injuries mounted up to be too much. It's the fact that the moves that were made or were not made by the general manager in the front office didn't amount to getting the holes filled that needed to be filled this offseason. And I said this early in the week, that at this point, the way the season is going, regardless, Joe Espada is not the guy to blame. He's not the guy that should be in the crosshairs. He's not the guy that would have made a difference if another manager was in the managerial chair. I'm not in a position to think that the manager can affect the game to that level to where, with as bad as they played player-wise on the field all season, if it continues, that you can point the finger and say, it's not them, it's him.
Yeah, but I mean, you know that the scapegoats happen.
Sure, sure, sure.
I mean, absolutely, scapegoats happen. 0367, it's a chicken or egg scenario. If Espada takes Abreu out, that he stays. If not, Abreu will take Espada out.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if I see
don't
it
that
way.
I don't think that it's on Espada that Abreu would take out. I think Abreu would be basically, you're not going to take the owner out.
Yeah.
I mean, you would hope that you'd take Bagwell and Reggie out. That ain't happening.
Yeah. 9458 would be better just sending down Jose Abreu or DFA. Well, you can't send down Abreu without a DFA. He can I believe he can accept an assignment if you DFA him and then, like, you know, do that sort of thing, but I don't think he would accept an assignment. So DFAing him would if he were to accept an assignment, you have to DFA him first. He doesn't have major league options. So it would be better if you could send him down, but it's not. You can't legally do it.
If he did that, another team, he'd be free for another team to claim.
Yeah,
right?
No one's claiming him
with no charge. No, but no, I understand that.
It would be a charge. You have to pick up his contract.
Oh, you have to pick it up.
Yeah, that's why no one's claiming him.
Okay.
If you put him on waivers, no one is touching Jose Abreu. He would easily clear waivers. He would clear waivers 1,000 times.
So then, don't the Astros owe him the remainder of his money?
If they release him
once he clears.
No, if they release him, they own the money.
Okay.
If they DFA him, if they put him on waivers and somebody claims him, that team owes the rest of his contract.
Yep,
if you release him, now you have to pay him the rest of his money. You can, I believe you can do one lump sum or just pay him through the duration of the contract, but you have to pay him his entire salary that you owe him because Major League Baseball contracts are guaranteed. Best players union in the business, best umpires union in the business as well. Keith from L.A., y'all should have paid Hector Norris, Josh Hader money. How about paying Hector Neris money?
No doubt.
Like, why would you pay Hector Neris, Josh Hader money? Just pay Hector Neris money.
I beat that drum all offseason. That's the one guy in the bullpen that I wanted back. I just felt like he was so valuable last year. He was so effective no matter when you used him. Yeah, you know, I loved his emotions as well. Sometimes he maybe went a little too far. But overall, he was a spark. He got the job done. He was effective. And he would have cost you a whole hell of a lot less than Hader. And the money that you saved between what you paid him and you didn't pay Hader could have been used for an extra arm and another bat.
I kind of fell into a wormhole yesterday. And it made me sick with this front office. Brian, should I carry this thought over? Because it's a bit of a depressing thought, and it might be long-winded. We're going to carry this one over because it's scary. I fell into a little bit of a wormhole yesterday when it comes to this front office. It terrifies me. The money that they spent terrifies me. When you start to put, like, the numbers and the figures out there, it is terrifying. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Spanish Flowers in on Durham on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something that's not terrifying are the goals from Pro Dunk Hoops. They're the best. They're fantastic. They're way better than anything else on the market, and they're way better than anything you'll find in the big box stores. They make the highest quality basketball goals that you can find. Tempered glass backboard gives you the real, true, authentic feel that you find in the pro arenas, that you find in the college arenas. A breakaway rim, more on that later. Thick steel poles, stainless steel hardware. It's height adjustable, and it's rust proof. You got to have that in Houston. So anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. We mentioned that that breakaway rim. Well, you can throw down some jams, because you can lower it all the way down to 5 feet. They also have an extended overhang, so you don't have to sprain your ankle in the basketball stanchion when you lay up the basketball off the hoop. Also, their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower goals with a drill. How easy is that? It's fun to do, too. A lightning adjust feature, they call it. You can get anywhere from 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. It's fun. It's easy. It's simple. You'll love it. Their accessories are next level, too. LED light kits for night play. You work. Kids are in school. Only time you have to play is at night. We'll get LED light kits. You got that covered. Backstop nets, pole pad lettering, lots more. And you can order everything, including professional installation, online. Yes, the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops to professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't need a ladder. You don't need a level. You just need the pros from ProDunk. Don't lift a finger. Let the pros of ProDunk do the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.